Forward momentum.
June 26th, 2046. The home of Celia and Mackie Stingray, Mega Tokyo.
I'm trying to help you. What they're doing is bullshit, and we both know it. But you gotta give me something.
I gave you guys my statement. I don't know anything else.
Mr. Celia? Still reviewing footage from last evening's incident?
I sighed and nodded. Something about this. I can't put my finger on it, Henderson. It bothers me.
You've spent years searching for any other survivors of the incident at your father's lab. Now the last one has died. It is understandable that you feel agitated.
Not what I meant.
Oh.
I returned to the playback.
I mean it, Miss Asagiri. There's a hell of a lot more going on here than a simple gang murder.
Not yet. But there will be.
Oh, I like her. Pausing the playback, I set the remote aside.
I know that look. You're considering her as a candidate for the Nightsabers, aren't you?
So what if I am? We have Heartsuit 4 completed, ready for customization. I think she'd make an ideal candidate. Henderson dug out a data pad and tapped a few commands.
Priscilla Suzanne Asagiri. Born in Old Tokyo, child of resident alien workers. Oh. Oh dear, I'm afraid Miss Asagiri has had quite the eventful life. Her criminal record is colorful, to say the least.
I'm sure. What does it list recently?
Mostly probation violations. She appears to have dropped off the grid in the last few years. Probably living in the Rift.
I see. Have Nene track down any paper trail on her we can find. Also, let Lena know we may need her on short notice.
Are you sure? Miss Priscilla seems too much of a wild card, personality-wise.
Tapping a command into the monitor, it brought up a close-up of the girl in question as she glared at the cop who'd been trying to help her. Her eyes, Henderson. I know those eyes.
Forward Momentum presents Bubblegum Crisis. Mega Tokyo 2046. The story of the Nightsabers. Late evening, June 26th, 2046. Advanced Deployment Police Headquarters, downtown Mega Tokyo.
My name is Nene Romanova, and I am more than I seem. By day, I'm a humble, if beautiful, computer clerk and dispatch officer for the AD, please. I collate data, manage patrol rotations, and do my part to keep the guys in blue tack armor on the streets, and keep the people of this fair city safe. Blah, blah, blah. By night? Well, not tonight, but other nights at least. I'm a bona fide superheroine. Along with my friends, I conceal my gorgeous figure within high-tech Beyond Bleeding Edge power armor. And fight the good fight to protect this city from the forces of cruddy old evildoers. That's right, kiddies. I am a Nightsaber. What? Never heard of us? Of course not. We're tippity-top uber secret. Heck, we're barely rumors out there in this shadowy vastness of the net. Of course, the Champions of Justice didn't recruit me just for my looks or awesome personality. No. You see, I'm simply the best around at breaking into computer systems. Maintaining them too, but that's boring. As a clerk at ADP, I'm perfectly positioned to keep my comrades up to date on what's happening in the city. And I also have plenty of access to all sorts of data that would take forever to crack, but only a few keystrokes for the law to access. Unfortunately, this job also has its problems. Namely, paperwork. Every time someone tells you about the glories of our supposedly paperless society, kick them really hard. I just finished a huge job off the books for the head of the Nightsabers, tracking down one R. Decker, a guy who disappeared years ago. But the baddies beat us to him. To top it off, I'd been letting some details of my desk job slide to finish the cyber legwork on Decker. So now my desk looked like a scale model of downtown, done in paperish miniature. F my life. From the other side of Mount Papermore came a voice.
Hey, Nene, you under there? Do we need to send the rescue dogs?
Leon McNichol, an ADP squad leader and investigator. He's one of those rare people who actually gives a crap. Not hard on the eyes either. Nicely muscled, straight brown hair, usually slicked back neatly, and dreamy blue eyes. Pity about the rumors regarding him and his partner.
What do you want, Weon?
Did she just call you Weon? That's too precious for words.
And that would be Leon's partner, Daily Wong. Daily is, well, to be blunt, a little weird. I looked up through a gap in the mounds of paper. Daily, don't you have any normal ties?
What's wrong with this one?
He fingered the old-fashioned bolo tie that he always wore. It belongs on the set of El Dorado.
Sure, I wear bolos. Bolo ties are cool.
My eyebrow quirked, and Leon tried to redirect the flow of conversation.
I need a favor. I need your incredibly awesome skills regarding all things informational.
Not now.
I'm prepared to pay, generously. Backstage passes even.
Damn him. Leon knew exactly how to bribe me. He had connections at most of the better music clubs and concert venues in the whole region. I fumed. Okay, fine.
I need the current residence of this woman. She's a person of interest in that drive-by last night.
You're kidding, right? Google it and leave me alone.
Come on, I need your help. Her public address is in the middle of the bay.
Huh?
The address she gave me was a phony. I'm pretty sure she actually lives in the Rift. Come on, Nene, please. This is really important.
Tracking people in the Rift is difficult. Very time-consuming.
I know. Please, Nene, you're my last hope.
Damn, him and his puppy dog routine. Oh, all right. But I need some help getting all of this stuff done first. I'm drafting Daily.
Wait, what?
Daily double takes are the stuff of legend.
Sure, take them. Thanks, Nene.
Hey, get your butt back here, Weon.
Leon almost danced as he sped away. I put Daily to work refiling and collating packets. Then my desk phone rang.
Ah, Miss Nene, good. Mistress Celia inquires as to your availability tonight.
Oh, geez, Henderson. If internal affairs were bugging my phone, the S&M jokes would never stop. Sure, I have a bit of time tonight. On the other end of the desk, Daly muttered.
She is searching for an old friend from her school days. There's reason to believe this young lady is living in the Rift section of Old Tokyo. Please use your talents and public resources to search for her in your free time.
That was Nightsaber code for, this person is important to this organization. Use any means to track her down right away, and don't get caught. Sure, send whatever you've got to my private email.
Already done. Good evening, Miss Nene.
Good night. I hung up the phone. Checking my private email drop without arousing the computer watchdogs was easy when you controlled the watchdogs. A moment later, I had the data. What the hell, I thought. It was her, the same girl Leon was looking for. Whoever this lady was, she was getting really important, really damn fast. I set to work.
Mid-morning the next day, along the Megatokyo Loop Highway.
Our command center is a terrific advantage. If the Night Sabers were ever deployed from a central location, sooner or later we would be discovered. But from the trailer of this innocuous and unmarked delivery truck, we can move about the city at will, without fear of being traced back to our home base. The armored trailer contains a basic maintenance bay for the hard suits, as well as a computer station with top-notch comm encryption.
Okay, Celia, I found her. Good news. She appears to have been in one place for a while. Bad news. It's deep in the rift.
I thought as much. It makes sense given what else we know of her. Lena, Mackie, and I are already nearing the area. Let me know if there's any official interest in the subject.
About that. There may be a complication.
How so?
One of the investigating officers asked for the same information you did, off the books.
What did you tell him?
Nothing yet. Want me to send him on a wild goose chase?
This is the same one who was talking to her at the end?
Yep. Leon McNichol.
No. Send us the data and give us an hour to get in position. Then give it to him as well. Let's see what he intends.
On it, boss!
Behind me, Lena was finishing up the pre-flight check of her hard suit. She moved with typical dancer's grace around the open frame, checking connections and power levels. As soon as she stepped into the suit, it would rise and close around her, wrapping her in a layer of ballistic ceramic and artificial muscle. She caught me watching her and smiled. Lena is my oldest friend, a sister in all but blood.
Relax, Celia. It'll be fine.
Right. Just watch her. For now. We'll make contact after we assess the situation. She imitated Nene's glib sign-off, throwing in a wave of two fingers in the vague area of her right eyebrow.
On it, boss.
Genom Hangar Facility at Tokyo Airport.
This is pointless, Kate. I don't have time to deal with this Berlin nonsense. I'm needed here.
The edge of anger in Brian's voice worried me.
Besides, I have to tend to Decker's girlfriend.
There's nothing to be done. We're tracking her down even now. Besides, the chairman says he needs you in Germany immediately. Don't worry. I can tend the home front in your absence.
Lesser men would see self-interest there.
A lesser man would have to survive me long enough to notice his error. That won a brief smile, genuine, despite his shaken reserve.
Yes, well, watch Flint. My man in this division says his move is coming soon.
I sighed. We'd been over this a dozen times already. It really doesn't matter what the narrow-minded idiot plans. I'm not waiting for him to strike first.
Plans of your own, I assume.
His eyebrow raised just slightly. I leaned in close and breathed into his ear. The less you know.
Poor Twit won't know what hit him.
Mr. Mason, sir, we have our liftoff clearance from the tower. Clear path all the way to Berlin.
Good flight, love. Your glorious return can't come soon enough. He smiled and kissed me goodbye, then strode purposefully through the door. I turned and used my phone to signal my car. Sure enough, a corporate limo was waiting for me at the front gate, its engine humming and the rear passenger door open. A voice from behind me called out,
"Oh, Miss Madigan."
Thomas Flint stood there, bold as brass. He held a raincoat over his clasped hands. Behind him and to the right stood a BU-45 bodyguard boomer, concealed in an artificial flesh mask and bland business suit. Some of our company's best work, that. What do you want, Snake?
To share your cab. We need a talk.
His hands twitched just enough to show me the pistol he wasn't really concealing. Fine, get in. I climbed in first. He handed the coat and pistol to the boomer, gave it a curt order to return to his office, and joined me, closing the door. My skepticism met his smarmy look of assurance as my driver pulled out into traffic.
Just a peace offering, Kate. I'm afraid you're, relationship with our friend Mr. Mason has shaded certain perceptions, and your reputation precedes you.
I don't suffer fools gladly, Flint, and I have no patience for games.
Of course not. To the point, then. I'm afraid our dear Brian has overextended himself, and the fall will be, how should I put this, costly.
What do you mean?
To be blunt, he murdered someone recently. It was well staged, but I'm afraid he was just a teensy bit sloppy.
I didn't say anything. Let the snake hang himself.
In his haste to kill one Richard Decker, he left an eyewitness.
The girl that was with Decker, the one the idiot AD police hadn't bothered to arrest. Flint slowly withdrew his small data reader from his pocket and handed it to me.
Priscilla S. Asagiri. No physical address, as she lives in the Rift, but the GPS coordinates of her usual hole in that pit noted in the file.
Why are you giving me this?
Like I said, a peace offering. Mason Star's fallen, we both know it. I applaud your loyalty to your lover, but be realistic. When he crashes and burns, you'll get caught in the flames. Unless you were my ally.
Your ally?
Truthfully, I'm not even asking you to betray your little boy toy. I'm not after his throne.
The conclusion was daunting. You're after Quincy Rosenkreutz directly? Are you insane?
That man destroyed what my family took 3 generations to build. He destroyed our company like it was some choice morsel on a platter. And now he's going to choke on it.
You'll never get near him.
I didn't succeed thus far by taking undue risks. I know the man's weakness. Something no one has even guessed at previously. When I move, it'll take Quincy completely unaware. You could help in the takeover or be ground beneath it. Your choice.
What are you planning? I won't commit without knowing what I'm signing on to.
Very well. Have your driver divert to the old cybergenics facility in Yokohama. Once we get there, I'll put all my cards on the table.
Southwestern corner of the Rift.
Our command truck sat parked on the side of a deserted road overlooking the northern edge of the Rift. Beyond the rather temporary fencing, the land dropped steeply away in a 100-foot cliff. Mackie was up in the cab of the truck, reading from a datapad. I sat back in the trailer at the computer station, monitoring the local police bands as well as telemetry from Lena's hard suit. She was concealed down in the Rift, 100 meters from our target. The girl lived in a somewhat battered old semi-truck. It made a lot of sense to me. Assuming the tractor was in working order, she could keep her home mobile and ahead of whatever trouble may be looking for her. Lena was atop a derelict 3-story building nearby. She had a clear view of the area, but would be almost impossible to spot. Her suit was designed for stealth and infiltration. As such, it carried a great deal of passive surveillance gear. Even now, she had several mic spikes deployed around the area. An invention of my brother's I find most effective. Mic spikes are 1/4-inch wide rails of non-reflective metal. The shaft, above a razor-sharpened tip, acts as an omnidirectional microphone, and there's a fisheye camera at the very top. There's also an internal capacitor to fry the spike if it's discovered. Of course, all this technology doesn't mean stakeouts aren't incredibly boring.
Computer, time?
13:21:14.
Is Lena bored?
Mackie asked from up front.
You're damn right I'm bored, Mackie. I'm stuck here in concealment, watching a tractor trailer parked in a field ringed by building debris. There's no sign that anybody's been by in weeks, aside from one thermal image of a human inside the trailer. If I didn't know better, I'd swear Nene was wrong.
How do you know she wasn't?
The trailer has the Priss spray painted across it on both sides.
That does tend to nail it down, yeah.
Movement below. An AD police cargo van came into view. It stopped well shy of the larger truck, though, and killed its engine. Lena, activate your laser mic. What's happening in the police van?
On it.
The infrared laser mounted in her suit's right fist would use an invisible beam to pick up the minute vibrations of sound hitting the plexiglass and render.
I don't know, Leon. Sure, Nene's info is usually good, but why are we doing this again? 2 ADP cops in the Rift without armor? It's like chum in the water.
We're doing it because it's the right thing to do. Christ, Daly, grow a frickin' pair. See? That's her truck.
Looks like no one's home.
We'll see. You open the rear gate. I'll go knock on the door.
Interesting. Let's see what happens.
Inside Priss's trailer.
Oh, cripes. I need an air conditioner. It was only late June, but already the inside of our... my trailer was uncomfortably hot. Maybe I should pull up stakes and find another place to park the truck. But damn it, I like this little nook of land my home was parked in. It was quiet most of the time and near the top of a slope, so when the heavy rains came, it wouldn't flood like so much of the rift. But the downside? There was no cover against the sun, aside from a few low buildings that didn't look stable enough to risk parking near. As I considered, I surveyed the furnishings, scant as they were. Washtub big enough to double as a bath, and I could get enough water. Cooler packed with ice and a camp stove for cooking. My guitar, recently restrung but untouched since the other day. In the storage area above the tractor cab was just enough space for a bedroll, and that completed the grand tour. Fun-filled 4 seconds, wasn't it? There came an insistent knocking at the side door. I went over to it and carefully placed a hand on the pistol taped above the small hatchway. Whatever you want, go away. I'm not in the mood for company.
Miss Osagiri, it's Leon McNichol. Do you remember me?
Crap. It was that damn cop again. How had he found me? One of the only bright sides of living in the Rift was being decidedly hard to find. What do you want?
Just to talk. I have something I think should go to you.
What the hell did that mean? Carefully, I undid all but the chain locks and opened the door 6 inches. He was standing there in civilian clothes. Not even a badge showing.
Hi. I need to talk to you about Mr. Decker.
What part of I don't know anything more isn't registering with you?
Are you sure there's nothing?
Yes, damn it! Why?
Look, something strange is going on here. Before we talk, can you come out here? We need to know where you want Mr. Decker's effects.
What? They aren't evidence?
Nope, not anymore. That's part of what we need to talk about.
He gestured to a van sitting nearby. Another guy was wrestling Ricky's motorcycle down a loading ramp. It was beat all to hell. Most of the body cowling was gone. But I knew how tough that bike was underneath. Wait, you're giving it to me?
Well, we couldn't find anything about his family. Figured that gave you the best claim to it.
Right. Give me a second. I closed and relocked the door. Then I went to the back wall and rolled up the trailer's main loading door. Between the three of us, we got the bike up and in. Panting with the job, I went to the cooler and dug out 3 beers. I don't like cops, especially not ADP cops. But these two were at least decent. Besides, anybody who does me a favor like this is all right in my book. Here.
Thanks.
I sat down against the trailer's wall and let the breeze refresh the air inside. Leon and his partner, whose name I still don't know, sat down along the other wall. So, thanks and all, but I was being honest. I don't know anything else. We're driving home in the loop. Red Merc pulls alongside and the driver shoots Rick. He tried to save me by knocking my bike aside.
And you didn't get the plate number, correct?
Didn't have time. Why? What's happened? His partner spoke up.
Well, usually when we bring in a bunch of gangbangers, a lot of, shall we say, creative charges are leveled to make sure we net everyone involved. A few hours go by, we figure out who was really involved, and we let everyone else go.
Well, at least you admit it. He shrugged and took another pull on his beer.
That didn't happen this time around.
What do you mean?
I mean, everyone we took in for questioning, still in custody. And not for penny ante stuff either. We're talking murder, drugs, rape.
That's bullshit!
My exact words, if you recall. Not only that, they all got transferred to other jurisdictions. When we tried to contact one of your friends who corroborated your story, we were told she wasn't in their system, and never had been.
How is that possible?
Oh, it gets better. The incident happened in full view of a traffic camera, one that conveniently was shut down for maintenance an hour before.
Shut down? Then you've got a lead right there.
Nope. The shutdown was issued by municipal maintenance boomers. Besides, it was on schedule for weeks, apparently.
Dead end, then. That's why Rick's bike isn't evidence anymore?
Can't have evidence if the case never existed.
Never existed?
Yep. All the reports we filed are gone, too. No trace in the system. No mention of the murder anywhere. Just a bunch of bangers out for a good time that got themselves arrested.
Leon set down his bottle and looked me square in the eye.
Except for you.
I snorted. He was fishing, trying to find out anything else I might be covering up. As if there was anything. I'd seen the face of the killer, but only for less than a second. The only thing I really remember was the grim, cold eye. For the last time, I don't know anything more. Look, you either believe me or you don't, but it's the truth.
All right, then.
Leon got to his feet, and his partner followed.
If you do remember something...
Yeah, I'll call you right away. His buddy dropped out the back of my truck onto the pavement and headed for their van. Leon jumped down, but before I could roll the door closed...
Look, Priscilla...
I winced. No one calls me that. Even if it is my given name. Pris. My friends call me Pris. He smiled. A genuine one, too. Not the pasted-on, handling-a-suspect smile a lot of cops use.
Keep your head down, all right? I believe you've given us all you can, but I'm damn sure someone out there thinks you know more.
I finally cracked. I don't know what it was, but suddenly, the dam just burst. But why? Why would anybody who could make the case disappear go out of their way to murder Rick? He wasn't anyone special!
Except to you.
Tears stung. Once more, my eyes found his, and I suddenly knew that he understood. This jackbooted thug of a cop had lost loved ones. I'm not sure how I knew it, but I saw the resonance of my own pain in his eyes. Yeah. Except to me.
That makes him pretty damn important, then. Stay safe, Pris.
He turned on his heel and hurried into the afternoon sun. I watched him go, and I turned back to look at the scarred and wounded remains of my lover's bike. You know, it's a strange moment when you realize you've passed a major decision and not even realized it. My feet were firmly on the path now. I knew what to do next.
Yokohama, arriving at the former headquarters of the Cybergenics Company. Now a Genom facility.
The old Cybergenics building in Yokohama is an oddly pyramidal structure, squat and squared off. It looks like it's trying to imitate the conical shape of Genom Tower itself, but on a much smaller budget. Flint conveyed me to his office. The space was much like the man himself. It tried for an air of power and sophistication, but only succeeded in approaching vanity. He noticed me appraising his office and smirked.
Can I offer you a drink, Miss Madigan?
I snorted. You can get to the point.
Very well. Tell me, do you know what a cyber droid is?
Of course. Cyber droid refers to the original Boomer prototype, back before it was redesigned for mass production.
And just what, pray tell, was the primary difference between the structure of a cyber droid's artificial brain and a standard Boomer AI?
Boomer AIs are streamlined, easier to produce.
That's not what I meant. The AI of a Boomer is a highly complex but relatively standard bit of technology. Cyberdroid brains are a silicone-based protein matrix built from the molecule up. Each particle subtly different, but working in complete unison with the whole. Its raw computing power was orders of magnitude beyond the primitive AI core presently used.
It suddenly occurred to me that Flint kept using a plural to describe what I'd always thought to be a singular creation. I needed to know more, but without committing myself. Good for it. Again, your point is?
Another question first. Have you ever heard of something called the OMS?
The shock must have registered on my face. The little weasel sneered at me, happy he scored a palpable hit. No point in denying it at this point. The Overmind system.
And do you know what it's used for?
It's the way Ginnam ensures that no Boomer firmware is altered aftermarket.
You don't really believe that, do you?
I frowned at him.
The OMS isn't just some ominously named corporate safeguard. It goes way beyond that.
I stayed silent. There was no way in hell I'd give him the satisfaction of asking.
I'll tell you what. You trusted me enough to come here, so I'll reciprocate. Look into it. As soon as you find out what the OMS is really for, you'll realize what I plan to do. Come back to me then, and I'll show you how we're going to remake the world.
Nearly midnight, July 8th, 2046, deep within the rift.
This little bolt hole was simply amazing. Concealed within a toppled and ruined shell of a skyscraper, it had running water, basic sanitary functions, and working electricity. My gang had stumbled upon it years ago, back before I even joined. It took them a few weeks of careful work, shoring up supports, closing gaps, and rigging a concealable entrance. No one knew where it was, or even lived near it. It felt like my own fortress of solitude. It had taken a week to get the parts I needed. I had only a very little money, but a lot of folks owed my friends big time. They were only happy to help me when I called in favors. I'd also managed to track down a few other items of note. The shotgun and extra ammo for the pistol from the trailer. I was on a mission. A desperate, but simple one. If Leon was right, then whoever was behind the red Mercedes was still looking for me. Once I was ready, I was going to go looking for them. Publicly, and with extreme prejudice. I tested the bike's starter and it roared to life. Deep, throaty bellow. As if Ricky's pretty girl was raring for the fight just as much as I was. Right then, time to be about things. I don't know why. It started with bathing. Moving with near ritual slowness, I carefully scrubbed my skin clear of the grease and dirt of the week's labor. I dried off and donned light, loose clothing, followed with great deliberation by the reinforced riding pants and boots Ricky had given me a year earlier, and the ride armor jacket with stiffened plates to protect shoulders and elbows. I took up the pistol and checked it over. The magazine was full, one round in the chamber. Thumb safety catch is still engaged, but all others removed. It went in the holster concealed at the small of my back. Next was the shotgun, fully loaded, cocked, and ready. It went into the newly constructed slot on the bike's front right fork. Ricky's helmet. I lovingly stroked the damaged side, the bullet holes gaped, then took up my own and pulled it on with the certainty of one who knows there is no returning. This would end tonight, one way or the other. I lit the fire in the heart of Ricky's bike, and we went to settle the score.
AD Police Headquarters.
Slow nights. The old hands say you should relish the calm. It never lasts. But I'm not an old hand. I was really freaking bored. At least until a blip on my console insistently demanded attention. I brought up the correct data search, hoping for a break in the routine. My jaw fell open. A quick look around me showed no one in my section. I dug out my cell phone and hit speed dial. It was picked up almost at once. I found her, on her boyfriend's bike, heading through the rift and up towards the loop highway. Hurry! She's armed to the teeth and looks pissed as hell. We can't let the cops get her first.
The Loop.
He flew. Not the free, joyous flight of the lifetime before, swooping through traffic right beside me. The purposeful, sky-slashing flight of a bird of prey. I was visibly armed and roaring through what little traffic I found in an aggressive manner. I must have scared the bejesus out of the rest of the drivers. When I slowed my pace, I realized I was all alone on the freeway. The cops had to know I was out here by now. If they did, my quarry was as connected as Leon thought, and they would be out here soon as well. This would be their one chance to nail me. Sure, this plan had a few flaws in it, but I was past caring. I saw it up ahead of me, a red Mercedes. Time seemed to slow as I stalked towards it. It was one of the same retro classic models based on the old gull wings of the last century. Many more details seemed to leap out at me. Was it the right color? It seemed a warmer red. All at once I was unsure. Is this the right one? I had to know. I gunned the engine and roared up beside the tinted window. Dark glass came down on the driver. Dark hair. Dark skin. Cool eyes. Yes! My hand snapped back and drew the pistol. The driver's eyes widened in shock, and her car swerved, trying to deny me a clean shot. Suddenly, she lost it entirely, and I was the one trying to dodge her wildly spinning car. My bike went out from beneath me, and I was airborne. I landed hard, leather ride armor taking the worst of it. Somewhere along the way, I'd lost my helmet, and the pistol had flown from me on impact. Her car stopped maybe 50 feet away. The driver climbed out and came towards me. I could see her better. I hadn't realized the night Ricky died that the driver was female. She had short hair the color of the deep night sky. Her mouth was set in a grim line. This monster killed Rick. She'd ended his life with no greater concern than that with which you'd squash a bug. She was coming to kill me now, and there weren't going to be any witnesses on this bare stretch of road. Like hell. I was hurting. Sore all over, but still fire burned in my veins. I was not going to be killed on the ground like a sick dog. If I was going, I was taking her with me. Forced myself to my feet. She was less than 6 feet away now. Out of my sleeve, I pulled a small knife, more a tool than a weapon, but it was sharp. Bring it, bitch! I charged, and the world whited out.
You've been listening to Bubblegum Crisis Blades, Episode 2, a Forward Momentum production, based on the anime Bubblegum Crisis, which is copyright AIC Artmic. Featured in this episode were Taylor Carlson as Pris, Kristen Yearington as Celia Stingray, Lindsay Steindler as Nene Romanova, and Jen Rhodes as Kate Madigan. Also heard in this episode were Rina Adachi as Lena Yamazaki, Mike Dent as Mackie Stingray, Chris Walker as Henderson, Michael Valenzuela as Thomas Flint, Edwin Tiong as Brian J. Mason, Christopher Stadther as Leon McNichol, Eric Ulp as Daley Wong, and Carl Gosline as the airport tech. This is Dylan Spencer. This episode was written and directed by Devin Cox. Music for the series is drawn primarily from the Bubblegum Crisis anime. For a complete music and vocal credit list, please visit forwardmomentumproductions.com/BGC. Bubblegum Crisis Blades is a non-profit fan production produced for the enjoyment of the fans. All rights to Bubblegum Crisis, the music, and non-original sound effects used herein remain the property of their original creators. No infringing claims are intended.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to this Forward Momentum production. If you'd like to hear more, you can visit our website at, all one word, forwardmomentumproductions.com. There you'll find links to all our audio dramas, as well as Forward March, our news and information podcast. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can send us an email at forwardmomentumproductions@gmail.com, use the contact form on our website, or you can leave us a voicemail at North American Area Code 585-54-AUDIO. 585-54-AUDIO. Thank you once again for listening.